It's that time again. Election season is upon us. President Bo and former Senator Epsilon going to break it all down. I'm Cabin Fever, and this is The Weekly. Today I'm glad to bring on two returning guests, President Bo and former Senator Epsilon. Much has changed since the two faced off for the presidency, and I had the chance to catch up on what each has been up to, and what comes next for them and their coalition. I want to make a quick note regarding the first segment with the president. We recorded that interview on Wednesday, and the subject of Richard Lee and the Dan Reinhardt case came up. In the time since the interview, Chairman Lee disavowed Reinhardt, though it was after his successful election as DC Council Chair. Additionally, in the time between recording and publishing, I have been asked by the court to serve as Mr. Reinhardt's attorney, and as such will not be covering the case any further in the public record or on this show. With that, President Bo, and then former Senator Epsilon. President Bo, welcome back to The Weekly.
Hi, thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Let's start with like a simple check-in. You're about halfway done with your first term. How has it been for you?
It's been, I'd say the best word to describe it would be tiring. I'm very happy with what we have been able to achieve up until this point and what we have planned for the next 2 months and beyond. But trying to... Thankfully, I had a little more knowledge going into the job than some others might, but still being like VP or acting president before is a lot different than doing now. I'd say, I enjoy the job, I enjoy the work, but it is tiring. It is draining.
Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned there, we spoke before your election on the show here about whether your experience as vice president would prepare you to serve as president. Now that you've made it, has anything surprised you about the position?
I wouldn't say one thing that I would say would surprise me is how important using other people's abilities and skills, relying on other people is. The presidency, I believe I even said this before, that this was such an important thing that you can't get it done just one person, that it's a team. You have a cabinet, you have staff, whatever else. But I would say that thought has furthered itself over the past 2 months, especially in points where I don't think I can handle something on my own or have the proper knowledge on a small particular topic area, which makes it important to have other good people around you to help you.
Mm-hmm. What would you say has been your greatest accomplishment as you're about half?
I would say easily my greatest accomplishment was our healthcare bill in the most recent budget, which was partially controversial but passed, where we basically said, look, we have these state healthcare programs which are already covering everyone, and they're covering everything basically in a universal fashion one way or another. And so I'm looking here from the eyes of the federal government. What is the point of having means-tested programs, basically, for a particular group, an age group, an economic group, whatever else? So we said, okay, we're going to take the federal government out of this, because we were like, okay, well, what is this money even being spent on? Mm-hmm. So we're like, okay, we're going to take the federal government out of this, and we're going to establish a program to provide financial aid to these already running programs. And then this has given us an ability to redirect some of that other money, which would have been spent on those programs otherwise, into other areas.
Okay. Of course, you and the nation at large, though, to a much lesser degree, had a scare recently as an attempt was made on your life in Lafayette Square. Mm-hmm. How is your recovery, mm-hmm. first of all? And has that event impacted your thinking in any way?
I'm fully recovered. It was just a plastic bullet, so nothing too bad. It has impacted me. It's made me look at how crippled the government's ability to do its job has been for the past 3 years. And we just had another shooting a few days ago. What we need to be doing is we need to enhance the security capabilities of the government. We need to make sure that our leaders, the president, the vice president, the cabinet, governors, members of Congress are protected. This was not really, it's an issue we had a few years ago, but it was not an issue we've had in this scale where it actually gets to the point where someone who is the president, the PPT of the Senate, Speaker of the House, whoever else, is actually being shot. So I would just say it gives you... It has shifted my focus a little more onto something which the American people may not have as their number one policy goal.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the second shooting there, and unfortunately, the one of the officers protecting Senator Joas Trudeau lost his life. Another critical condition. Of course, wishing the best to him and his family. I don't know. Have you had any opportunity to look into the situation with now recently elected DC Council Chair Richard Lee? And him accepting the endorsement from the suspected shooter, Dan Reinhardt. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Endorsements, of course, are, I would say, broadly out of someone's control. What I would say is wait for a statement. Wait to see what the DC Chairman Lee has to say on the matter. If he didn't realize he got the endorsement or whatever else. I don't think there was any malicious intent to him having kept the endorsement. So I would just say that we don't need to take steps to condemn him this early when he hasn't even had an opportunity to make a statement on the matter.
Okay. Do you have some rough idea of like how long it would be before we could start to take the silence as some sort of an indication, or is that kind of a way of just trying to let things fade away?
I would say give it a full day. I would say give it 24 hours. And if he doesn't respond within that period, I mean, I think a full day is fine. If he does not respond within that period, then it's important for us to take into account that silence.
Okay. I know you're not in party leadership, but I did want to get your thoughts on the fall of the Pirate Party and how the LRP's absorption of some of their former members might change the calculus in the legislatures currently and moving forward as we look toward the midterms here next week.
Yeah, we gained a lot of great membership from the former Pirates who were tired of the bad leadership within the Pirate Party. I had a lot of respect for the Pirate Party and the captain, Ryuki, just a few weeks ago. And it's unfortunate that the so-called Right Coalition, the Right Alliance, ended the way it did. But I'm glad to see us accept members like the two congresspeople from the North, One-Eye Jack and Pepper Potts. I think it gives us the right wing a more unified front going into the next election, which I think we're not two people who are somewhat indirectly competing to be the bigger of two parties. We're going in, this is our goal. We have these policy goals. We're listed on the ballot as LRP. So I think it has a positive impact overall.
Okay. The LRP also had a pretty significant pickup over the last few days with former Governor Ted Dett returning to public life after having a somewhat miraculous recovery from his cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Was that more of a surprise than the Pirates joining the LRP? He was kind of considered like the inheritor of former President Garland's North once he left to ascend the presidency. Mm-hmm. And really stayed in that mold of the left stronghold. He was one of the main creators behind the whole convention debacle. I don't know how involved you were in the process of the discussions, but what are your thoughts on his change to now join the LRP as an independent affiliate?
Yeah, I was not involved in the decision-making process, letting him there or otherwise. Past few days, I do welcome him. I understand
I do not know
why he may have grievances with the SDP. Of course, if I remember correctly, he cited changes since when he founded it as the American Liberal Party compared to now. And he's always he was always more of a moderate individual rather than someone who was far left. Who even before we had a lot of ideological agreements otherwise. But I would still say that the move was surprising because even just a few months ago, he was running to be the left nominee for president.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Last question that I have prepared here. What can we expect this coming week? Do you feel that the Libertarian Republicans and the right more broadly have a chance of taking control of Congress back for the first time in I don't even know how many months?
Absolutely. I think we're going to have wonderful results. If we don't take both chambers, I think we will hold our ground in the House, if not expand. Currently, if I'm remembering correctly, right as we speak, we have the largest right-wing House caucus since even before Garland was president. So I think it would be hard to let even that number go, especially we have had a lot of momentum following the most recent state elections and special elections in between, where just we had victory after victory for then Pirates or LRP members. I think we're going to have a great showing in the Senate races. We have a lot of good opportunities to tell the American people, to convince them why these left senators have not been doing the job right, and why we need a change in Congress.
All right. Like I said, that is all I have prepared. Do you have anything you would like to say to our listeners while I have you here?
No, I'm looking forward to seeing the results of the upcoming elections. I would wish preemptive good luck to everyone who is making themselves available for public office this weekend, and say that whoever wins, I will thoroughly enjoy working with, and I look forward to presenting my agenda for the rest of the term, as I did a little this evening at the State of the Union address, to basically round out the remainder of the goals of this administration, the things I ran on, and beyond.
All right, President Bo, thank you again for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It was great to be here.
Former Senator Epsilon, welcome back to the Weekly.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Glad we can get you in. So you've been away from American politics for a little bit following your presidential run, moving to a position in the United Nations. How was that experience?
It was definitely an honor. I've always, deeply respected the mission of the United Nations and its goals, its organizational goals. It was really deeply satisfying experience to be able to work at the United Nations and to do some reforms there because of how important it is. I was pretty happy with the reforms that I was able to do while I was there, relating to casualty evacuation, as well as an updated and higher level of readiness for some of the pledged peacekeeper assets that United Nations can use through the creation of the United Nations battle group level. I liked it a lot.
Glad to hear that. People have a pretty decent idea of like how Congress and the American government works, or at least we like to think so. Especially with elections getting more often and more representatives cycling through. Not many know about the UN. Can you just detail a little bit like what your role was on the world stage?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the United Nations, I was the Undersecretary General for Peace Operations, and that basically meant I was in charge of the Department of Peace Operations. That's basically peacekeeping. My role there was just to kind of coordinate and administer and manage that department regarding peacekeeping operations, UN field missions, etc. Organizing things in regards to that, putting out policy directives, and working with the field commanders, working with the field commanders from the United Nations headquarters in New York. So it was pretty awesome. There are a lot of UN peacekeeping missions right now. They don't always get a lot of attention, but they're incredibly important. They serve very vulnerable regions and communities that are really in need of some help right now. So it was an incredible opportunity, and I'm deeply grateful for all the hard work those in the Department of Peace Operations at the UN put into their jobs, because it's not easy. It's complex issues.
I'm sure. So clearly you didn't enjoy retirement from electoral life too much, considering you are now back in the middle of a house race. What led your decision to leave that position in the UN and try to head back to Congress right now?
Yeah. So, I thought that there was more I could do, at the domestic level right now. I mean, there's various reasons for it. One is, of course, that, personally, I have a lot of strong you know, personal connections with a lot of people in domestic American politics, obviously. And I enjoy working with them a lot. And I mean, I guess you could say I kind of miss some of them. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that I can offer and do at the domestic level that I just couldn't do at the United Nations level, despite the fact that the United Nations level is still incredibly important. But as most people know, the resources at the United Nations tend to be, you know, lesser. The purview tends to be much more strict. You know, there's still a lot I can do at the domestic level. But I was very happy to have been chosen to be appointed to that position. And I decided to now put my hat into the ring and see if I can get back into American domestic politics and see if the people will trust me once more with representing them in Jefferson's 3rd Congressional District.
Yeah, so Congressman April switched seats this cycle, or switched districts, I suppose. But what led to your decision to challenge that specific seat?
Yeah, so I challenged in Jefferson's 3rd Congressional District because it was my previous district that I represented in the House when I was first elected a long time ago, if you remember that at all. Yeah, and so yeah, that's the reason why I decided to go there, because I have a deep connection with that district. Okay. I consider myself a friend of Representative April's, so I had deep respect for them, and their decision to move was their own, of course. I was you know, like, regardless of assuming they had stayed, regardless of you know, if one of us had won, there would have been an excellent representative there. I decided to run for Jefferson's 3rd Congressional District because I've already previously represented, and it's just an amazing place and district.
I'm no one to talk, having a pretty long and storied career in elected positions. But what is, you came back from the UN because of a wider scope of what you could do in domestic politics, like you said. What is left on your agenda to be done after some time in the House and some time in the Senate, bit of time in the Senate? What's driving you this term? What are you looking to do?
Yeah, so I mean, of course, there are a lot of issues that, you know, everybody knows that I'm big on and that still need to be addressed. For example, I've been working for a long time on getting a functional public banking system through Congress, with the Public Banking Act, as well as forgiving all student debt in the U.S. with the Student Loan Relief Act. You know, those are kind of some big issues that I've made a name with myself on throughout, but there are also some other issues that, you know, I haven't had a lot of time to tackle before, that I'd love to tackle now. For example, issues relating to the tribal nations, especially, you know, being from Jefferson, having, you know, so many tribal nations and people affiliated with tribal nations in Jefferson. I'd really like to get into you know, reforming and overhauling kind of how the federal government treats and works with the tribal nations, and also looking at ways that we can really help out the situation there in regards to the economic, the socioeconomic conditions on the reservations and among the tribal nations in general, because the conditions on the reservations are absolutely unacceptable. So any way that we can help with that, I mean, not only just helps all of us, of course, but, you know, especially with the long history of, you know, breaking agreements with tribal nations, including the recent Gambling Act in Jefferson that violated over 100 tribal state gaming compacts that really hurt the ability of the tribal nations to be economically and fiscally self-sufficient, because they no longer have that exclusive right to gaming or gambling. You know, anything to help with that is something I'm really looking at seriously. if I'm elected to represent Jefferson's 3rd Congressional District this upcoming session. So, yeah.
Okay. Great. Your exit from the presidential campaign took some heat from the right as you tried to really wake the left up a bit to the tides changing. Has the rise of the right wing since that, or since then, at the state and federal levels, changed your thinking at all or vindicated that position?
It's kind of complicated, of course. I mean, like, I would say I did emphasize that in my concession speech. I emphasized that the left really should concentrate more on policy and getting good policy passed. And that's really what I believe has made us successful for so long, is I think our organization on that front and, having some concerted goals together. I definitely warned about people who would try and abuse the feelings that many people had after, that very contested election, where, I won the popular vote but lost the Electoral College, where people might be feeling more willing to do things that are more, what's the word for it? I mean, I'll use loosely, that's not quite the word for it. More, I guess, aggressive tactics. And I think we saw that with the convention, which, as you know, I've always been against, constitutional conventions. Mm-hmm. I couldn't say anything in my UN role, but, I'm not a fan of the constitutional mechanism of the Constitutional Convention. So sure. That's not something that I would have supported if I was still in domestic politics. And I think that it came off as a power grab to a lot of people. And I think that showed. And that's something I warned about, including, of course, the person who really, advocated for it the most, former Governor Ted, who really pushed for the convention, kind of dropped out of politics for a little bit due to, I believe, medical issues they're having. And now they're back because of misdiagnosis, to my understanding.
That's, I believe so.
But they decided to join the Libertarian Republican Party, which I know that whole kind of situation was very off-putting to a lot of people.
I tried to get him on. I would love to try and understand it better because I can't.
That would have been very interesting. I worked extensively with Governor Ted in the past, as you probably know, so I was kind of confused by that as well. So I would be interested in hearing that as well. But it's definitely, things have definitely changed. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. There are a lot of new people getting involved in politics, and that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And, at the end of the day, it's always the people's choice. Usually. in Congress, it's always the people's choice.
So I have to ask, not to cut you off too bad, but I want to make sure. Is your position on the Electoral College, and this has become a slightly bigger issue since your election?
Of course, yeah.
Just I've seen more people discussing it in debates and such. But is your position that in another system, you would have won, and in the system we have, you lost? Or is your position that rightfully you won, and in the system we have is wrong?
Legally, and I respect this because, the peaceful transition of power is
of course
incredibly important.
I'm not expecting you to come out and say, no, please take up arms. So this is, the revolution begins as soon as he publishes the podcast.
Vote one, the Electoral College, and I respect that, and I've accepted the decisions behind that. I'm not contesting that. And so he's the president. That's how the current constitutional order is.
Do you feel that he has a proper mandate?
I think it's pretty hard to argue that you have a proper mandate when you don't win the national popular vote. It's when a majority of people are for somebody else, I think it's pretty hard to make that argument. I still, you know, I wish him the best person. As I've said, Bo is a good person, and I really think he does have good intent in the White House, regardless of the fact that he didn't quite win that popular mandate that I think any president, you know, I think he would have wanted that as well. But in my mind, it's an unjust system, really, to have it with the Electoral College, where the popular vote winner can't, doesn't always win. You know, you can win a majority of the votes, but still lose. The majority of, you know, people actually vote for you, but their votes are worth less. I mean, for example, in Jefferson, the vote of one Jeffersonian under the current Electoral College is worth 1/15 of a Puerto Rican, somebody in Puerto Rico right now. And that's not even the worst out of the states. The worst is Dixie, to my understanding. Dixie right now, I believe it's one vote in Dixie is worth 1/24 of a vote in Puerto Rico under the current Electoral College system. It's absolutely absurd and undemocratic. You know, even if we take Puerto Rico out of the equation, because obviously Puerto Rico is, you know, a very unique situation, you know, there's still massive differences between the votes, even just between, you know, the states when it comes to representation in the Electoral College with electoral votes per state. So it's just a very, very unequal, very undemocratic system. And I find it very difficult for anybody, you know, especially anybody who's running for election, you know, to truly be able to justify that and tell people, like, yes, your vote should be worth less than this other person. That just really kind of grates against some very basic and natural ideas concerning what democracy should be. I would say, of course, you know, when the Electoral College, you know, doesn't match up, you know, the results of that doesn't match up with the popular vote, there's going to be more concern afterwards. Of course, there's going to be more debate. You know, obviously, when, you know, I guess you could say when something messes up, you know, because, you know, most of the time you could say the Electoral College and popular vote match up, but just because it's rare that it doesn't, because this is, to my understanding, the only time post, you know, after the 2018 reforms that this has happened. Although, of course, in 2016, there was Hillary Clinton and President Trump. And, you know, in 2000, there was Gore and Bush. But regardless of that, in general.
I don't have my fact checker on me.
Yeah, but, you know, regardless. I mean, to my understanding, at least.
Sure.
But, you know, it's generally, historically, it's been rare. It's kind of been more often recently. It's been rare, but just because it's rare, you know, just because it's a rare injustice doesn't mean it's not an injustice, you know? Mm-hmm. It's definitely not a system that I support. I don't think it's democratic. It's to me a relic of a very undemocratic time. So I would definitely say we need a national popular vote system instead. That's really what I've been advocating for.
That's all I had for you. Anything you would like to discuss or say while I have you here?
No, nothing in particular. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today. I think we went a little bit over time, like we probably do.
Not as bad as the hour long episode. It's okay.
We should do another one of those. I mean, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your audience who listen to this podcast. It's a great podcast. I listen to it all the time whenever it comes out.
Well, thank you.
Other than that, anybody in Jefferson's 3rd congressional district, I'm running for the House seat there. If you have the time, go ahead and take a look at me, see if you're somebody you think I could, you could support for, that seat. I've always really been trying to support the people. So that's who I'm really looking out for. That's what I care about. So thank you.
All right. Thank you again for coming on.
Yeah.
Thank you again to President Bo and to former Senator Epsilon for joining the show. Remember to subscribe wherever you listen to get episodes delivered straight to your podcast feeds. The Weekly is a public record podcast.